There he is. Now, what did you just ask me?
I asked you if you can drift the backhoe.
I'm willing to bet you could.
I don't drive heavy machinery, but I'm assuming you can drift pretty much anything with a wheel.
You can absolutely drift a forklift. Don't ask me how I know this.
So, can you drift a horse and carriage?
Oh, well, the horse probably not, but the carriage follows behind it, so you could absolutely drift a fucking carriage.
So when they have the kart racing in Waterdeep during the kart racing holiday, I wonder how much drifting goes on. Could you make a Fast and the Furious theme module that all encompasses the kart races in Waterdeep?
You'd have to add drifting mechanics, but I don't see why you couldn't. It is, it's all about family.
It is all about family. All this and more on today's episode of Grumpy Dungeon Masters.
That's right, where we talk about the Fast and the Furious, a film franchise of which I've seen three of them.
Who are you?
I am the Grumpy Dungeon Master, Jay, and who are you?
I'm tired.
Hello, tired. Welcome to the podcast.
My legs feel like jelly.
You were out LARPing all weekend.
Yeah, you should have been there. The weather was great. It was pretty much 50. It was the lowest.
Yeah, that would have been nice. And if I had known for sure ahead of time that the weather is going to be nice, I would have considered coming up. I didn't really have anything going on this weekend, but yeah, it's that time of year. You never know. It could have been 28 degrees all weekend.
Well, we were talking on the porch while everyone smoked cigars like we normally do at the LARP, you know, mm-hmm. Not actually role-playing, just bullshitting.
Yeah.
The comment came up from our good friend Michelle that there's two speeds at our Shadowmoor LARP. There's three instant killing spells on a Sunday afternoon, and traditionally Sunday afternoons when everyone just kind of like empties it out and the combat's not real hard and plot and the DMs aren't really trying to kill the players.
Yeah.
So either there's three instant killing spells on a Sunday afternoon, or it's the funniest goddamn shit you ever saw. Jump almost an hour later, and we're walking into town for the field battle, and the field battle is a giant beanstalk has sprouted in the center of town, and there's a giant toy chest that has spilled open that's stuck in the beanstalk. So the plot team, all like 12 of them, were all dressed in onesies of various types.
Oh my God.
And they were basically just giant toys fighting us. And Michelle was just like, this is what I come here for. So
I just want to say, years ago when I was head of plot, Michelle was on my plot team, and I think that was the year that I ran a toy field battle. I did run a toy field battle. This is, I don't know, a decade, 15 years ago. It was a long damn time ago, but I'm fairly sure Michelle was on my team.
Two speeds, man. Two speeds.
Yep.
So it was funny because we had a couple of our good friends, Eric and Chris Beasley. Eric was dressed up as a dragon. He was some kind of dinosaur with a club tail. And our friend Beasley, who's a very large man, just like I am, and he was in a pink bunny onesie.
Of course
that
he was.
One size too small for him. And just all we could do was just laugh hysterically as we hit him with pipe foam.
Yes, for anyone who listens to our podcast regularly, I told the story about Peacock. That is also the gentleman that played Peacock, Cinnamon the Peacock.
Cinnamon the Peacock, yeah. But that was probably the most enjoyable field battle. Now, see, the best part was for me, I play a half giant in the game, so yeah,
you're the only person there who could legit pull it off.
So. I started going, man, it's like, man, what kind of shit is this? They have the symbol of my giant oppression right here in the middle of town. And I started making a big deal that there's a beanstalk here. And someone came up to me and goes, hey, can you climb that and see what's up there? It's like, that sir is racist. How dare you assume that I, as a giant, would climb a beanstalk? You sir, that's insensitive. And I started picketing the beanstalk. I wasn't fighting anybody. I was just basically complaining about how inappropriate it was for there to be a beanstalk in the town and how it was oppressing me as a giant.
You know what you should do whenever you're on plot next time is run a plot line where the enemies on their like tabards and shields have like a beanstalk as their logo.
Well, the best part was... I'm making a big deal about this. I'm not fighting anything. Also, they were dropping, instead of dropping coin for a loot, they were dropping small toys. So they're handing out like army men, dice, candy bars.
I would have been trying to collect the dice. I would have been trading like army toys for the dice.
I got two sets of dice and I gave two away. And then we were all back in the cabin looking at all our dice and we're like, oh, what color do you want?
Yep, there it is.
So we get to the end of the field battle. And so the head of plot calls a hold. And he explains that climbing down the beanstalk was a 30-foot tall giant toddler.
Oh no, it's a toddler.
And it rips up the beanstalk and uses it as a club to kill us all.
Of course.
So as he's counting down the lay on, I'm just getting ready. And so the second he says lay on and we all begin fighting again, I scream at the top of the lungs, oh, come the fuck on! And just proceeded to beat the crap out of the giant baby. It was very entertaining.
Yeah, that is a fantastic way to end a year of Shadowmoor hijinks with more hijinks. Yeah. No, I love that.
So hopefully you have some other topics for today, because I only have one thing I want to discuss.
Oh, I'm sure we can come up with plenty of things to talk about. I have a couple of things that I'm interested to go over. One of them, actually, I gotta read something to you, and I want to get your thoughts on it.
All right.
So you know the polymorph spell, obviously.
Yeah.
So I was looking at shapeshifting as a druid and the polymorph spell. They are not exactly identical in a couple of different ways. One of the different ways is, I'm going to read the exact text for polymorph. The creature is limited in the actions it can perform by the nature of its new form, and it can't speak, cast spells, or take any other action that requires hands or speech. All right. So it very clearly says it can't speak. So if I polymorph somebody into a sheep, and then I cast speak with animals on myself, can I have a conversation with it?
I think it's just more of an issue of it not specifically saying that. It's not that it can't speak, it's just that it can't speak any known languages.
Yeah. And I as a DM, I'm going to let you have that conversation. But there are those DMs out there and or players out there who are rules as written. And I can just see this going terribly at some point. I'm sure this has happened in somebody's game.
Yeah.
Anyway, very, very brief little conversation I just wanted to bring up that is absolutely ridiculous. Get better on your wording, Watsy.
Well, I mean, it comes down to the word count. You know, they probably had a big
I know.
It's a polymorph is one of the longer spells. So,
yeah, I mean, there's a decent amount of text to it. You do need to actually read all of it. It's not a just, oh, I have a vague idea of what this does and run with it.
I have a vague idea what it does.
Yeah, everybody has a vague idea of what it does.
Turns you into a sheep.
Yeah, it turns you... well, at least in Baldur's Gate 3, it always seems to turn you into a sheep.
Yeah.
Sometimes it does it with wild magic, which is fucking hilarious. So, speaking of WotC, very quickly, because we're kind of getting down to the wire here for 5.5, or D&D, as you like to call it, or D&D 1, as they've been calling it.
They call it 1D&D.
Whatever.
And they stopped calling it 1D&D when people started calling it D&D.
Yeah. and to everybody, it's either D&D or 5.5, because that's just how the fuck we are. So with the new edition coming out next year, we are not right now. It's November the 20th.
Yeah.
They to get stuff printed takes 6 months or so. Because they're like, whoever they're sending this shit off to has to, they've got a schedule of what they're printing for the next, 6 months, a year. So if WotC wants to get things printed, they got to hurry up, get this stuff off to the printers, and get in line with everybody else.
I'm sure those arrangements have been made.
That's debatable.
When is the anniversary of D&D?
Oh, 5th edition? Or
no, just as a brand.
Let me see. When was D&D created? Thank you, Google. 1974, so it is next year. The exact month, I don't have a clue.
I think it's August.
Could be.
That's when they have anniversary events planned. So I don't think they're coming out until August. So
okay, so that leaves 6 month time period, a little more, where nothing is released.
Well, they have a couple things that are being released. They have the Vecna bundle. They just released a free PDF today.
Was that the Ice Peak or whatever?
I have actually had it here.
Peril and Pinebrook. I saw that.
So I mean, they have a couple things, and that's an introductory adventure, which makes me wonder why they hired, because it's actually one of the people that work for Ghostfire Gaming.
But releasing a PDF is not actually releasing anything.
But I kind of wonder why they would release an introduction to D&D right now.
Getting it prepped for new edition coming out.
Yeah, but they don't use any of the new language in this PDF.
I haven't actually seen the whole PDF. I just saw the.
They still call D20 rolls D20 rolls.
What's the new language for them?
There's a new term for rolling a D20.
Just because came up with a new term during the all the shit that we were looking at a while back. Just because they called it something different doesn't mean they're sticking with that.
Yeah, they called it a D20 check.
Yeah, D20 roll check.
But, the adventure looks it's very short and very simple. It's a very meant for brand new players.
Yeah.
Something different. Like, I don't like the Stormwreck Isle one. Mm-hmm. Not that it's a bad adventure. I just don't like it as an introduction to D&D.
Okay.
It doesn't, the difference between Phandelver and the new one. Phandelver goes to 5. The new Stormwreck Isle goes to 3. Stormwreck Isle is just combat. Okay. You have a good little story. You wind up, there are a couple little encounters here and there. You explore the island a little bit, but there's really no NPC interaction. There's no exploration mechanics at all discussed. No survival mechanics discussed at all. It's basically just a lot of really good combat encounters back to back to back. So if that's all your D&D is going to be, then Stormwreck Isle is fine. But you compare that to Phandelver, which was like a straight up really good standard. You're in a cart to start. Actually, technically, it starts with role playing with a dwarf.
Oh, is that the one where you get killed by the wolves?
Yeah, you're on a cart. You're ambushed by goblins. You go to the cave to rescue the dwarf. You get killed by the wolves. You make new characters. You do the cave again. But then you're in Phandelver, or whatever. The town.
Yeah.
And you can explore a town. There's NPCs to talk to. There's little side quests to do. And it's a very kind of video game MMO-esque in a little way. And a lot of people didn't like that. But at least they established a town and NPCs. And, you can kind of get little bits of information here and there, and then you could start addressing the overall story as you wanted. You just want to hammer through the Red Band ruffians, or do you want to go explore the old well with the Banshee? You know, you have a lot of options, and the players have agency in that adventure versus Stormwreck Isle, which is just, all right, beat these guys up, choose one of these three places, go beat them up. Once you're done beating those three up, go over here and beat up this wizard. You're done. And looking through this Peril and Prime book, it's still, there's a couple encounters, but there's a lot of like role playing with the dragons and talking to the dragons in it. So
I already hate it, just because you said it's, you know, it's for beginners and there's fucking dragons in it. That's
so fearsome dragon. It's a baby dragon.
I know.
He's like roar.
Now, I don't know. I generally feel that like an introductory game for brand new players, the only thing you are really trying to do in that is teach them the mechanics of the game, and keep it no higher than three levels. If you go higher than level three, then it's not just an introductory. It's you're running a bit more than that, and you do want a lot of combat in there because you're trying to teach them the mechanics of the game. Roll the d20. Roll this. Why did you roll the d20? How does it work? Like, you're literally trying to teach them the basics of playing this board game. Because that's essentially, like, you're just trying to teach them how this shit works. The role-playing aspect should generally come from playing with other people who are a little more experienced, or from seeing the DM role-play. Because new players who know nothing about D&D aren't going to understand how to role-play. And I've seen this a billion times. Like, anytime I have a new person with me, I can't say I've ever run just a pure group of new players, but I will occasionally introduce new players in with a more experienced group, and the new player will sit there quietly the first few games. And after a few games, they start to get a feel for it. But the mechanics is the hard part. That's what it takes everybody a while. You don't know why you're rolling this die. You don't know how to or what you're rolling. You always have to ask questions.
Is this a D20? No, it's a D12.
Oh, I see. Hell, I get that all the time. Because I have
the veteran players.
Sometimes
get bifocals.
Yeah. Sometimes for the veterans. Sometimes for myself.
Get bifocals.
I have bifocals.
You're old now. Get bifocals. Yep.
No, I never have problems with the standard D&D dice. When we play Dungeon Crawl Classics, though, that shit happens all the time. Which one's the D3? Wait, where's a D? Are you sure? That looks like a D5. I'm not certain.
Yeah, one of those, like, multi-dice that have, like, all the dice that roll on one side. At once.
Yeah, I need an app or something for Dungeon Crawl Classics that just lets me... Okay, I need to roll a D30. D18. I don't think there's a D18. I think it's 16.
I do want to get some of the D20s or like D21s, D22s, and like sneak them into games. Like April Fool's style games, not like real games. Like,
yeah.
All right, I'm going to use the special die. It's a D23. I crit on a 20+.
Now, good luck. What you do is you hand out a D22 to all of your players as a Christmas gift. But
a D19.
Yeah. But just tell them it's a D20.
Yeah. Here, have this D19.
Then the first time they roll at 22, they're going to be like, what the fuck?
I can't ever seem to crit. It's always a 19. There's two 19s on a die.
Yeah. On opposite sides, of course.
All right, so the new adventure, it's cute. Like I said, a little bit of very, very basic encounters. Like, the egg snatchers are little creatures that are snatching dragon eggs, and they have literally like AC hit points, bite, and a hit. Nothing else. You know, that's it to them. But there's a lot of like neat little RP encounters kind of built into the system, you know, and it kind of actually goes through like how turns are made and everything like that. But it, at least I feel like this is making an attempt to teach people how to play.
Yeah.
You know, versus Stormwreck Isle, which is just a small adventure.
Yeah, me having never run any of these, ever never looked through any of these, I you know, I can't really give a proper assessment, but I've heard you talk about Phandelver versus Stormwreck Isle a number of times. And, all I can do is assume that you know what you're saying is that is the case.
What I'm saying is the absolute truth, and I do not lie ever.
Yeah. So another interesting thing that I've seen this shit coming up a lot lately, and I even hear it from some of my players. They seem to think that Dian Dunn is going to actually be Dian Dunn and fail horribly. And
we've been talking about that ad nauseum too. I'm sure our audience is tired of hearing it. But
I don't think it's going to, though.
They haven't built the confidence in the player base that they did when they released 5th edition. And that's been the issue. And part of that is pretty much just this year with the missteps from Hasbro, the missteps with EOGL. And that's really what it is. That's what it comes down to. It's just no one has the confidence in the next edition yet. And like many things, you can always like say, well, the even ones are always the bad ones. The even Star Trek suck. The odd ones are the best.
Well, this isn't 6th edition. It's 5.5. It's still an odd edition.
Right. Sure it is.
Specifically, what I'm talking about is less about the 5.5 and more about the VTT. Because you know it, I know it. The VTT, that's their bread and butter. That's where they're going. That's what they want. That's what they're going to try to make money off of. I don't think everybody who has the 5th edition books is going to buy into the 5.5 books. I know I won't. I know none of my players have any intentions of touching 5.5, not because it's going to be worse or better, just because we're not on that path anymore. But the virtual tabletop, if they do it right, and this all obviously this still remains to be seen, but it just prints money if they do it right. You know, you get your shit up and running. You get your D&D Beyond subscribers on there, and they've still got a lot of those. And then you just start releasing skins for dice, skins for minis, skins for monsters. You know, just like they do on Overwatch, we see this with Blizzard constantly. What was it, $68 for the La Seraphim skins recently?
Yeah, I mean, but that's kind of okay. It just has to be done in a way that makes it better than what's currently out there.
Yeah, I don't even care that they're going to do it. I'm all for it. D&D is not what I want it to be, and it never will be again. I don't have any delusions on that.
It's not that it's going away or changing mm-hmm. from what you remember. It's still there in the exact way that you remember it.
Well, no, D&D hasn't been what I remembered it since 3rd edition.
Well, you can always go back to 3rd edition.
Yeah, and I have. That's why I don't care. You know, they can do what they want.
With the VTT hurdle, okay, they need to evolve their brand and their books just as much as any other company does, okay? And because it's Dungeons & Dragons, it's at the forefront of what is considered norm. So they have to basically sit back and understand that they're the flagship and treat it as that they are the flagship and treat that with a little bit of respect. And we saw them failing miserably with that.
They don't care about that. They're fucking like D&D is an IP to them. They don't care about legacy or flagship or any of that shit.
Right. And if they don't, then it will fail. And if they do, it won't. So when it comes to the VTT world, okay, people will definitely go to the VTT that is the easiest for them to learn and to manage and provides the most content, okay? So right now, Roll20 is the king of that hill.
Yeah, because it's free.
It's not free.
I mean, it was free for me the whole time I used it.
No, there is an online subscription to use all the advanced features for the VTT.
Sure, if you want all of that, but you didn't have to have them.
You don't have to have them, but you do if you want nice line of sight walls and shadowing and shade and fog of war and custom tokens and this, that, and the other thing. You need to have a subscription, which is fine.
Yeah, I don't
want to have a subscription to that, so I use Fantasy. So I use Foundry, and Foundry lets me just kind of do what I want and install mods and patches and get the VTT functioning how I want, and I host it myself. Roll20 hosts everything for you. You can buy everything pre-made. You can buy all the maps and everything already pre-assembled. People are making content and throwing it up there. I get most of my token miniature pictures from the Roll20 shop because people develop those and put those up there for sale. And there's one artist in particular that I like a lot, so I always buy his tokens. Download the tokens, and I use them for Foundry. But so Roll20 is the king of the hill. Subscription-based, you can buy all the, well, not all now, but most of the D&D content and port it over super easy, super effectively. So that's the minimum bar that Hasbro has to beat with their VTT.
Yeah.
So they're going in a more 3D direction.
Yeah, they're shooting more for a tabletop simulator. If anybody's familiar with that app on Steam, and I've played with it before, and it's tabletop simulator's fancy. Like it's kind of cool.
I haven't had much experience with many of the tabletop simulators or the 3D VTTs. I know there are a couple good ones out there that have focused on the UI and assisting the devs with actually, like, you know, making content and making maps easily. But that's where the real problem is. Okay. Like, I am not a 3D modeler. I am not an artist. I can make generic 2D maps because it's from one perspective. Mm-hmm. If you're starting to ask me to make a 3D terrain model of a town so I can have a town map, I'm going to have a bad time. I'm not going to use that program. That's why I don't use any of the tabletop simulators. You know, I don't want to have the majority of my time spent with making those versus someone like the Corridor Crew with their dungeon, Son of a Dungeon D&D podcast / video stream that they do, but they're graphic artists. So making 3D models of things and these really cool elaborate sets and using green screens for the bringing their characters and the real people, that's perfectly great. That's great on them for doing that, but that's well outside my scope of being able to work in. So Hasbro has to find that middle ground with their VTT that's going to be usable for most DMs, not a problem. And I think they're going to go the route with, well, we won't let you create the maps, but you can buy our maps.
Yeah.
And now they have to hire a development team to make all the maps for the stuff. And they're not going to release the builder because the builder is going to be too complicated.
I don't know. They could probably make more money if they allowed people to make maps and then sell them, a la DM's Guild.
Right. But if you look at the maps that are being made and sold, 90% of them are traditional 2D top-down perspective maps.
Yeah.
You know, there is a couple of shops that sell the tabletop simulator style maps, but they're few and far between. Yeah, and the good ones are even fewer. Because it takes real artistry and knowledge of building mechanics and everything to kind of build those out.
Yeah, that's fair. And they would that means that WotC would have to put their they would have to put it out there for people to be able to program. I don't know what are they using Unreal, or do they have their own
Unreal 5? Yeah.
Okay, so then somebody else on Unreal, somebody who really is familiar, that could go out and actually make maps.
Yes, but I don't think that the average DM has the kind of time.
No.
To make a 3D model, when I need to make 3 battle maps by this weekend, I can just jump in and make 3 maps. You know, there's a bit of a learning curve, but now you want a 3D model rendering of these 3 maps? That's just an exponential complexity that's just not needed.
Yeah.
And it's not going to work. Now you can download our maps and use our maps for our map builder and stuff like that. Then they're selling those things piecemeal.
And they definitely will.
But why even do that? When you look at how successful Baldur's Gate 3 was, and they're developing something almost the same exact thing as Baldur's Gate 3 to basically be their VTT, when they could just partner with somebody who's already done the work. Okay, I already have all the animations there, and just leverage that tool that they built for it. And then they can start mass producing the maps instead of basically going out of their way to develop a whole different tool that people have become familiar with. Because they're struggling with a lot of the problems that many VTTs do. Like, how are you going to handle movement? How, you know, like, yeah. You look at the current mapping system, there's a grid, but nothing snaps to a grid, you know?
Right.
And so if you're playing something with 3D models and whatnot, and they all kind of look like HeroForge models, and you're just moving those around, some people like that. Most people don't. They want to see actual animation. So you look at Baldur's Gate 3 and like, here's full 3D models that, you know, with all the fancy dress and everything in the world, that has a pretty decent, you know, video game system. So D&D feels like it's going to be more of a video game than 4th edition was.
Oh, it very well may be. But, you know, 4th edition was designed as a video game. 5th edition was altered just slightly. Because, you know, the idea was to always take it online, and now they're getting closer to that point where they're actually going to have this thing online. Yeah, it's probably still a couple of years off at this point, but I'd guess 2025 or 26, you know, the VTT will come out, and hopefully for them it's good, and hopefully people buy into it. Because otherwise, they're gonna have problems on their hand.
Well,
to say it nicely,
we'll see how it goes. Right now, they have their little map system up there for beta on D&D Beyond. It's absolute crap, and If that's what they're going to be moving forward with, then good luck to you. You're dead in the water. I don't know. This new edition with minor class tweaks, but just changing the verbiage to make it work better for VTTs and stuff. I don't know. I'll just wait and see what things come of it, and I'll focus more on things that actually matter, like actual design. Like, is the XP system actually correct, or should it be scaled differently? And how can CR be fixed?
Yeah.
You know, the actual design problems that people are actually having problems with.
Or how can you stop hit point bloat?
How do you stop hit point bloat? How do you make weapons actually fun to use instead of just adding shitty mastery features to it that are worse than 3rd edition?
I think the mastery system is a step in the right direction. We're not going to sit here and talk about it because we've gone over it before, but I think it's a step in the right direction. They need more, obviously, variations in weapons, but you want to add more stuff without overdoing the simplicity of the 5e system.
Like, two editions of the game had unique weapons in the game that worked well. And this is, and the new mastery system is what they're coming out with. It's just, I don't know. I don't want to keep complaining about 5.5.
I don't know. I don't think it's necessarily complaining about it.
Your players think that it's dead on arrival. I think it's not dead on arrival. I think it's going to come. I think it's going to walk through the door. I think everyone's going to cheer and clap and be great. And then he's going to sit down on the couch and he's going to shit himself because he just died right there. That's what I think is going to happen.
I think the VTT, it will struggle in the beginning. This is just my personal thoughts. I think the VTT 5.5 will struggle in the beginning and then take off and make them a shitload of money. I think 5.5 as an addition won't do anything. People will buy it. Some people will buy it. Some people will not. And that's just how it's going to go. Because I've yet to see enough changes in all. Because they ran this testing thing for a year. I think that's how long we've been
running it.
Yeah, and they're still running it. And we looked at everything that they released, whether we wanted to or not, and none of it appealed to me. It was just, oh, all right, cool. It's kind of more of the same. you know?
Yeah, I look at other systems and go, okay, well, that looks really cool. Like, Shadow of the Demon Lord looks like a really cool system and a lot of fun. The stuff that Crooked Moon's putting out looks like a really good addition and change to fifth edition.
It's just 5.5, but they're actually adding stuff. There's new things.
It's fifth. It's fifth.
Yeah, it's just fifth, but they're adding a lot of stuff.
Yeah. And that's the world right now. Right now it's basically, hey, build your own campaign setting, okay? Add in what you think is cool, take out what you don't like, and release it and see who plays it. If no one plays it, try again.
Yeah.
But, you know, how many more successful campaigns have they just had that are updates or small changes to the 5th edition rules that have brought in tons of money? From Advanced 5e to Ouroboros to Crooked Moon to Shadow of the Demon Lord to his new one that just came out, Shadow of the Mage Wizard or whatever it is.
Yeah, because people like 5e and people play 5e, but they want more out of what's in 5e. So they're looking, now they're hitting this point where they're going to secondary sources.
Yeah, and I think that's what's going to continue. So
Very likely.
I don't think that the secondary source for that front that's from Rasbo. I don't think the second source that's from Rasbo is actually that good. And it will flounder a little bit after its release. The new release is going to make a lot of money, as it always does.
Yeah.
New players will come back, but we're still going to be playing the old adventures, you know? And now that I have to start basically clarifying that I'm going to be playing 5th edition and not 5.5, maybe it won't matter. Someone built a character that's 5.5.
If everything is backwards compatible, then it shouldn't make a difference.
Yeah, but I'm not going to remind you. Did you calculate your weapon masteries in that? Oh, did you take the new cantrip spell effects into play?
Well, if you're playing 5th, then if you as a DM are, like, you wouldn't have to worry about that stuff. That's players who have that stuff. I know this isn't realistic, but this is how it should be. You know, if you are playing a 5.5 or 5e game, doesn't matter. So say you've got the 5th edition player's handbook and your player has a 5.5 and builds their character off the 5.5. The game's going to work the same way. And if they forget their weapon masteries, that's on them.
Listen, I'm going to give you an example from our LARP, okay? As to why that statement will never, ever, ever work, okay? So, in our game, fighters have two abilities. Critical slays and fatal blows.
Yep.
Okay. When a fatal blow hits you, okay,
you go to slain status. Yeah.
Okay. You go to slain status. That is correct. This weekend, one of our good friends and one of the lore keepers of the game and one of the rules maker of the game was like, no, fatal blow takes you to dead status.
No, it doesn't.
And I looked at him and go, no, it's slaying. He's like, oh yeah, I forgot because the change to assassination messed me up. The previous game owner, 2 years ago, made that mistake multiple times.
Oh yeah.
So I'm saying, I bring this up because
it's actually worse as people get older and go through what edition itis.
Right. So if you're expecting new players to remember, that's not going to happen.
If you're expecting all the DMs to
remember the specifics, that's not going to happen either.
As a new player, I knew every fucking thing. Like, I didn't have issues because I was new, so I was only reading what was current. So I never had issues with rules, whether it be at our LARP, whether it be D&D. As I've gone through 4 editions of D&D, you know, it's gotten harder to remember all of the rules. But new players, if they're really wanting to play, man, they're going to be all in on that shit. They're going to know what their characters can do. if they don't, well, I don't know what to tell you. It's not your fault that they can't remember their stuff, especially if they're the ones making their characters.
Yeah, but as someone has to teach new players a lot, it's incredibly frustrating because now I have to learn a new edition of the game that is more complex but less fun to play.
I mean, well, we don't really know. I doubt it's more complex other than adding weapon masteries. As far as I can tell from all the shit we looked at, it's literally the same game. With, you know, the classes might be changed a little bit, subclasses might be tweaked a little bit, but it works exactly the same.
We'll see. We'll see when the book comes out and chaos falls upon the world. And the second horseman rides through the sky with his first edition D&D book being held high in the sky.
As Cthulhu rises once again, rains his D20s with his noodly appendages upon you. Hey, did you know that apparently in Japan, Call of Cthulhu is the most played tabletop game?
I don't doubt. I wouldn't doubt that. A true fact.
And they actually don't call them tabletop role-playing games. They're called talk games.
Huh.
Yeah.
That's weird.
I learned this today. I was watching, Roll for Combat. I know you've seen that show at least a couple of times. And one of the guys was saying that on there. So I'm just going with what he said. I don't know that for a fact, but kind of interesting. They were talking about who takes over after D&D fails, like which company is going to step up. And it's an interesting topic. If D&D less fails, but if they succeed and go wholly online, which I feel like is their goal. I mean, they'll probably still release books and everything, but their goal is to be a VTT. Who sort of takes up the mantle of books, pen and paper at the table?
Probably Call of Cthulhu or Pathfinder.
That seems likely, or Critical Role. I think Critical Role is probably the most likely just because of how famous they got. If their game comes out and it's actually really good, I could see that being the case.
Maybe. I'm not sure. I hope not, because I don't want to have anything to do with Critical Role.
Hey, bro, do you even Critical Role? Yeah, that's what
this
it would
isn't
be.
How Matt Mercer plays the game. Oh God!
Oh God!
How much bad that would be playing the Critical Role RPG.
Yeah, it wouldn't even be. Do you table or do you play Dungeons and Dragons? It would be. Do you play Critical Role?
Are you Matt Mercer? Do you know Matt Mercer?
Have you ever heard of Matt Mercer? Matt Mercer is a god. Next thing you know, fucking D&D players or role players showing up with like Matt Mercer tattoos on their neck.
I'm sure it's already happened.
Oh, I'm sure.
I'm sitting here waiting for the Brendan Lee Mulligan versus Matt Mercer war, the great DM war of 2026.
Yep, that's how the world ends. The DM war of 2026.
So, I'm gonna talk about a real topic now. I'm gonna save this segment.
Oh, sure.
So, I've had to rethink about something that I said a long time ago about how I really hated something about D&D. And there's something about the new system as well, too, where essentially all the new subclasses that they've came out with recently, all the new stuff that they added to the Bastions and the playtests, were pretty much just like, hey, you do this thing, and you get to cast this spell once a day for free. And I hated that.
Yeah, because I know how much you hate just giving people spells as things.
So I'm going to walk that back. I'm actually okay with it. I'm okay with it in the scope of Dungeons & Dragons Forgotten Realms setting. In the Forgotten Realms setting, people being able to cast known spells as an extra function is fine, and it makes sense. I've been thinking about this for a while.
Okay? Crazy, but sure.
I don't even think that it's lazy. I think it's thematic. Okay. So it does one thing where basically you don't have to create a new skill for the fighter class. You get the ability to throw fire, but it's not the cantrip firebolt. It's you're summoning flames from the realm of fire or some shit like that. You just get the cantrip firebolt. It simplifies that, and I understand that. But in Forgotten Realms, being that it's a Jak Vance magic system, or based in that magic system,
all D&D is
right. It makes sense, and it's fine. It's fine that Forgotten Realms does it. If other systems do the same thing, that's where I have a problem, because then I think it's lazy. Because no, that's just a D&D mechanic. When people ask me what D&D is, D&D is part of that is getting spells to do special things. There's no reason to give a fighter a jump skill when you can get the jump spell. Because that's how it works. That's how Shadowmoor, our LARP, works. You know, things are always magic-based. Magic is the key cornerstone of that setting. You want anything cool, wifty, and special, you have to get formal and know magic to do that. You're a fighter? Great, awesome. You can punch people to death all goddamn day long, but you're not going to do anything cool.
I mean, you're not wrong in that regard. Like, at least in our LARP, all of the classes have some pretty awesome skills. The fighters have a couple of skills that only fighters can do. But when it comes to magic items specifically, everyone in that game needs magic items. And it starts off, you just get a +2 sword. That's the beginning. But if you really want something awesome, then you get that +2 sword that has the ability to swing and, you know, hit people with a couple of spells in it.
Right.
It's progressive thing, you know, and you just start adding to your magic item collection to make you a lot harder to kill or give you the ability to kill quicker.
Yeah. So they were just testing out, playtesting the ability to do like skill strikes.
Yeah.
Like skill strike disarm.
Which works exactly like spells.
Which works exactly like spells. So just give the fighter access to spells then that are just these tiny little balls of spells. And that's it. You know, instead of making the prereq, you know, these things, it's strength or something. So you got to. I guess what I have to, what I'm trying to say is you have to kind of give into the magic system of that setting, you know?
Yeah.
So like Crooked Moon with their new Fate magic system, you know, I'm expecting not to see it just be a carbon copy of the Vance magic system with, you know, different verbiage, you know?
Yeah.
Kind of like almost like every Final Fantasy has their own magic system, but the names all stay the same until PlayStation.
I mean, there's only so many magic systems you can do out there. You know, you got your Vance
variation.
Yeah, but you got your Vance magic systems where people memorize spells. You've got your mana systems where you have a limited number of points to do spells with. And there's not a hell of a lot outside of that. Like those.
There's the Magic the Gathering tapping magic system that people have turn into a magic system.
Yeah, but that's just essentially just using a resource to do it. You know, that goes the same as you have a limited number of points to do this thing.
Right, but it also carries on too. It's like, okay, well, what is the limitations of it? So in the advanced magic system, the limitation is you memorize your spells every single day. And this was going to be my second point. Is D&D really still the Vance magic system? Or has it now evolved and morphed into its own special thing that it is the way it is right now? Because, like, back in the day, back in first edition, second edition, Final Fantasy 1, 2, and 3, you know, where you woke up in the morning and you pulled out your spell book and you sat down and you memorized these spells for the day, okay?
Yeah.
And technically, that's the way it is in Shadowmoor, too. We just do it at the beginning of the weekend.
Yeah.
Where you sit there and you choose the spells per level that you are going to cast for the day. That is you memorizing the spells. And then you sit there, you say the verbal, you expend the memorization of the spell, and you throw it.
Yep.
That doesn't happen in 5th edition.
Happens all the time if you play a wizard.
I know it happens, quote unquote, but no one actually does it.
What are you talking about? Every time I play a wizard, I fucking do it.
All they do is when they build their character, they choose their spells. Okay, hardly ever change their spells unless they know that they're going to change some spells for that day. Okay, pull out their arcane focus, and then Harry Potter bullshit wave that thing around until they're out of their spell slots. The idea of sitting down and memorizing the spells on a daily basis have just kind of like been pushed to the back. Yes, it still happens, but it's not like the focus of the magic anymore.
Well, that's because the game has changed.
Right, because the game has changed. So really, is it still the Vance magic system when now, or is it just like a Harry Potter magic system?
No, it is definitely still the Vancian magic system.
Because it's almost like, hey, I have all these spells. I have five spell slots at level one. They're all magic missiles. I'm not memorizing magic missiles. I'm just choosing magic missiles for all these. So it just becomes an energy counter at that point in time. That's how people treat it. They don't treat it like you're sitting there memorizing the spells down each day. Like, we kind of really do more.
But the simple of it is the Vancian magic system. I'll even read the D&D lore wiki so we know the exact sort of terminology. The Vancian magic system is the popular term for the traditional Dungeons & Dragons spellcasting paradigm in which characters must memorize or prepare spells ahead of time and can only cast each such prepared spell once. This generally, especially in 5e, really only applies to wizards. Sorcerers, clerics, like none of them go through this. That changed after, I'm guessing, after third edition. I don't think, right. Yeah, like sorcerers weren't even around in second ed. They were in third, but they weren't around for second edition. In second edition, if you played a spellcaster, you fucking memorized your spell ahead of time. It didn't matter what class you were. So, in the case of wizards, whether you actually sit and change your spells or if you decide, I'm just doing all magic missiles, that's up to you, but the system still works the same way. You have the ability to do it.
Yeah, but it's not treated that way anymore. Like,
sure.
And that's kind of the kind of thing. It doesn't feel like that system was the way it was in the past, where like you'd wake up and like, okay, well, shit, we definitely need to make these changes, you know.
But you're playing superheroes nowadays. Like 5e, you're playing fucking superhero characters. Third edition, you could definitely be stupidly powerful, but you could also very well just fucking die. Second edition, you were going to die. just get used to it.
So, but like, you know, like even now, like, so I'm just kind of like, I've stopped raging against the mage machine of Forgotten Realms, essentially. Yeah. And like, I'm okay. Like, the fighter's not really memorizing his enlarged spell in the morning. He just has it naturally, you know.
Yeah.
The bastion that gives you identify, you know, or the magic eye spell or whatever it is in the morning, it's not making you memorize it. It's a Harry Potter system. You just know the spell, say the right verbal, wiggle your stupid arcane focus, and the spell goes off.
Yeah, he does some inner Goku shit, you know.
Yeah. it's not the elegant sophistication of knowledge, of arcane knowledge long lost and used and wielded like a fine dagger. It's just alright, pull out your arcane focus, alright, say this following word, a la Expodium, and your opponent explodes. You can only do this 3 times a day because it's a third level spell. Yay.
I mean, who even uses a focus?
Everybody. Every fucking person on the face of the planet. It's not your table, I'm guessing.
Maybe. My table, it's not a thing. They don't even fucking exist. They've never been spoken of or talked about.
Arcane, every game that I've ever played of 5th edition Magic the Gathering Everyone has used a focus of some kind, whether it's the cleric in their medallion, or the wizard in their wand, orb, staff, or what have you. They all are just Gandalf spell chucking motherfuckers with very little emphasis on verbals or the fact that I have to memorize these spells. And that's the ultimate just thing.
It's sort of it's kind of sad. Yeah.
It's Harry Potter. Harry Potter magic is D&D magic now, and that is how it is played at the table with the people around me. And I don't like it.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna rage against it. I understand it. That is what is in the zeitgeist ethos of people's thought processes.
Except Harry Potter, they could pretty much just cast unlimited spells. Like he could
tired if they cast too many spells.
Oh, okay. So is a mana system.
Just like wizards get tired. It's an energy counter, yeah.
Yeah, it's a mana system, or you're burning your stamina, whatever you want to call it. They set a limitation on how often you can do it based upon your constitution.
Whether it's brain wrinkles or if it's basically heart pumps, it's all the same. You're wiggling a focus and magic comes out. And I just had to accept it. And I don't care anymore. I'm letting it go. This is me letting it go now. I don't care.
Let it go. Let it go. That's the only
time. My one little butterfly that I called fucks has just flown away. And I have no more fucks.
Yeah, I mean, you have to accept it. Yeah, the system works the way it works. And it sounds like you kind of really want to play an earlier edition of the game.
It's not that I want to play an earlier edition of the game. I just want a game where the management of resources is not hand-waved away, but at the same time, not an offensive burden upon the players.
Yeah, okay. I can understand that.
Like, I understand that carry weight and coin weight are a thing. And I know that, like, oh, you can become over-encumbered and stuff like that. Like, I don't even think encumbered has ever come up anytime in the past couple of years playing 5th edition. Or playing any game, really.
Only time I made a big deal of it was when I ran some 2nd edition stuff for my players a little while back.
Like, It's just everyone is just a superhero with a 1,000-pound rucksack on their back running at full speed wherever they go. And like Baldur's Gate is like a good example of what that problem is visualized. Yeah. You know, I have my fucking strength hero. Like, okay, strength hero can carry a lot of shit. Carrying 300 pounds of gear and still leaping 20 feet. Straight up. And like, I get it, it's a video game, these guys are superheroes, but just like, yeah, does really the encumbrance need to be that bad? But like, even then, like, even if encumbrance is an issue, like it is like in Fallout and a couple like Skyrim and those, you just find your first companion and you're like, alright, you carry all this shit.
Yeah.
Because you don't have an encumbrance.
I mean, that's in the beginning of, you know, first edition D&D, that's what you did. You hired people to carry your shit for you. There's even a comic called Nodwick that used to be in Dragon Magazine. Nodwick, that's all he is. He's a henchman who carries things for the adventuring party.
Yeah, and like, it's more realistic, but like, does it become burdensome to try to include anything like that? Is it fun? Does it add flavor to the game? Maybe, maybe not.
It depends on the game. If you're trying to play superheroes, the answer is no. If you want a grittier, more realistic setting, yes. And you need players that are heavily invested in that game or willing to go down that fucking rabbit hole with you. If you tried to do this at Adventures League, you're going to get just shut down. But if you get a table of players who want that feeling and want to really care about some characters and care about the setting and care about what's going on, then it, you know, that would probably work. I have a, I've got a pretty closed table with experienced players. I could absolutely run something like that where encumbrance matters, where stats matter, where you are expected to die relatively easily, you know? If I ran up to my local game shop and tried to do that, it's not going to work because people up there, they're looking for a quick, simple role-playing session.
Just want a quick fix, man. I just got to kill a dragon. Yep. You're going to kill a dragon, man. It'll be great. It's going to pop right in the head.
Yeah, by the way, anyone, if you just Google Nodwick, M-O-D-W-I-C-K, the pictures that will come up are literally this just henchman carrying suitcases and chests and magic items while pulling a cart behind him filled with gold. Like, that's all he did. He was just a fucking henchman who carried things.
I don't get paid enough for this. I'm going home.
Yep.
All the gold with him.
While the adventurers did all the adventuring, and he just had to suffer along with them. Yeah.
That kind of reminds me of the Conan the Destroyer movie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Where you had this adventuring party, you had Conan the Barbarian, you had that 7-foot-tall black chick. I can't remember her name.
Oh my God, what is her name? Yeah. Yeah.
The only person that could probably makes Arnold Schwarzenegger look small.
Yeah. She was really famous in the 80s, too. I'm going to find it while you go ahead and keep going.
Grace Jones.
Grace Jones, thank you, yes.
And then you had the wizard guy, the Asian wizard guy.
Yeah.
Stereotypes didn't exist in the 80s.
Yeah, Mako. He was real famous in the 80s, too.
You had the thief.
Yep.
And the best part of the thief was he never contributed to the combat. Uh-huh. He was just out there stealing
shit. The very first fight in the movie is Conan roughing up some dudes, and he's hiding underneath a horse looting shit.
like that needs to be the tabletop game. Like, it doesn't... Like, I get that everyone wants the DPS and stuff like that, but just having that one rogue that runs around and, you know, just loots everything, and it's just in the right spot to get that finishing blow in. That's all you need.
Yeah. Yeah, you want,
like,
you want
characters
to be
unique. Every round
you're
stealing shit, you're adding an extra sneak attack die to your next attack.
Oh, that could be a fun little class.
Right, wouldn't it?
Maybe for every 500 gold piece, you add a plus one or some shit. You'd have to set the numbers a little better than what I just stated, obviously, but...
You're just dealing... Okay, so far in this combat, I've stolen 350 gold, so that gives me a plus 6 to my next attack, and it's been 7 rounds, so I get 7 sneak attack die.
God, that sounds like the Final Fantasy games. Remember that... There was a class that literally threw gold at people.
Yeah. The Final Fantasy remake... I'm watching a YouTuber go through and play that right now, and one of the really cool design things of it is they added a dancer class, okay?
Yeah.
So the dancer dances, okay?
Yep.
She's a support class, so she can basically debuff the enemies, she can buff the party, and she heals the party, okay?
Mm-hmm.
She starts off every combat with 80% bravery, all right?
Okay.
And then when she dances... she loses 20 bravery. Okay? So the bravery is a percentage of a successful dance. Okay? So you pretty much, at the start of the combat, and you're at 80 bravery, you have an 80% chance of your dance being successful. And so more than likely, one can go off in the first round. But then you're at 60%. Okay? So you can keep dancing, but it's going to get lower and lower for each successful. And if your dance fails, that's your whole turn.
Okay.
If she does an attack, she gains 25 bravery. So if she spends the first round attacking, she adds 25 bravery, her dance is at 105, it's going to succeed and be 5% better. Okay. Huh. A very interesting way. So she has no magic pool, no anything like that at all. That's all it is. She just hits people, her bravery goes up, she dances, and it goes down. Really, really neat system how they made it work. She gets one dance per level, you know?
Yeah.
She has to talk to dancers to pick up the dances. It's just a very, very simplistic, but it works perfectly fine in the Final Fantasy setting.
I'm trying to find it online. I might have to pull out the book. Like, I'm not going to do it right now, but in Kingdoms of Kalimar from 3rd edition D&D, they actually have the Basirian dancer who does similar type stuff like that. But I don't know the specifics on how it works. But yeah, like even D&D has a dancer class.
Yeah. So I thought that was neat. Like, I really like that kind of mechanic in... I mean, like, that's thinking outside the box and it's, getting it's a something magic, that works.
Sorry, it's a magic system that's not utilizing any of the current magic systems. It's not a mana pool. It's not a advanced magic system of memorization. I like the idea of you get a dance per level because bards used to do a thing like that too, where they would just get songs at certain levels, but it never really worked because the songs were generally not good and they never really tried to fix it or balance it out for 3rd edition.
One of my other favorite, it's really not a magic system, but it's a mechanic in a game, was in Final Fantasy VI, and you had Edgar and Sabaad. Okay.
Sabine.
So Ed, was it Sabine? His name has changed like 9 times. So
okay, we're talking about Final Fantasy 3 as I know it.
6, yeah.
Yeah, okay, so 3 as I know it. That's the one. Make sure we're talking about the same damn game here. All right.
It was Sabin first, Sabain.
Yeah, Sabine.
Whatever. They're twin brothers. One is the king of the kingdom, and he's an engineer, so he gets like different like chainsaws, drills, whatever.
Yeah, right, yeah, yeah. I forgot about him.
And the other guy was basically a monk, essentially.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he had what was called blitzes. So you would choose blitz, and then like nothing would happen. The game would freeze. And that's when you have basically enter in your Street Fighter maneuver.
Yes, yes.
And then hit A, and if you did the maneuver correctly, he would do the maneuver. So like down up A was his suplex attack.
Yeah.
Left right was his pummel attack. His blitz rush was basically he had to do 2 360s XYA on the controller. Like that was kind of cool. It would only work in a video game. You could translate that to paper and all, but
yeah.
I really like that too. There's no magic system. You just better be good at Street Fighter, motherfucker.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. God, I had completely fucking forgotten about those characters.
I remember I spent a good week learning how to do the dragon uppercut in Street Fighter Alpha 3 because I never could do it as a kid. I never knew what the maneuver was. I could do like the hurricane kick and I could throw the Hadoukens, but I could never do the dragon uppercuts. So I practiced for like a whole week and I eventually learned how to do it successfully.
Yeah, because it took practice. It was, you know, you push forward and then you have to roll it down and back up. And it took a little work.
It's forward and you have to hit down forward at the same time. But if you rolled it down and rolled it up, it did a whole different move.
No, that's literally how I've done it for. Oh, that's fair. I never played Alpha 3, so maybe.
And then doing two quarter rolls forward and then high punch was Ken's super dragon uppercut.
Gotcha.
We have flames.
Like Street Fighter 2, Turbo, Super Street Fighter 2, and all that. I played the shit out of those, so I know all those moves. But anyway.
I only played Blanca and E Honda.
I mean, they had the same moves.
Because I could press that one button super fucking fast. Yeah. That's all I could do.
Yeah, or hold backwards and then push forwards.
Like, I couldn't get those to work.
Okay. Ever. Well, they literally had the same moveset.
I didn't do the cannonball roll. I just did the
Just the lightning. Yeah,
I could do the throw where I could bite your face.
Yeah, I was playing Street Fighter 6 a little while back, and it's good to know that all of those old moves still work. Yeah. Last thing I had to talk about that's tangentially related to tabletop games, but I started playing Cyberpunk 2077 again since they came out with the new DLC. I've quite been enjoying it. It is definitely a spy thriller. And now it's got me wanting to buy Cyberpunk Red again.
Yeah, I do want to play Cyberpunk one day.
Yeah. I don't know. I absolutely just adore that setting. Like, I've always been a huge fan of Shadowrun because, like, it's cyberpunk and everything. But the more I play the cyberpunk video game, the more I think I would just like that setting without all the fantasy mischief involved, without the elves, without the trolls, without the magic.
I'd be fine with the elves and the trolls and stuff, like the different like races.
Mm-hmm.
It's just pick tech or magic. Pick one magic system, you know? Like, and I get that Shadowrun kind of is kind of like the meld of both, and you can fight both, and you can kind of just do one or the other, and it works for Shadowrun, but...
I mean, if you're playing Shadowrun as a character, you are probably going to pick one or the other.
Right.
Because the character, the system intentionally does not blend magic and tech. The more tech you have, the shittier your magic score is.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is just, I would just focus on one, you know?
Yeah.
It would be like playing like a Final Fantasy game where you have all these different magic systems rolled into just a character. And you need one of each in order to be able to be successful. Or be a well-rounded party. And it just, I don't know. I like cyberpunk because the cyber tech that they have is equivalent to magic, you know? I can make swords appear out of my arms, and I can jump super high, and I can hack things from a distance, and I have telekinesis.
They've added some new stuff with the video game, and now it used to be you could just jump really high. Now it's you can just sort of springboard forward at the fucking speed of light. Like my character,
I can go invisible. I can slow down time.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of that. I mean, yeah, I've got the, I guess it's the Sandevistan, which slows down time for 5 seconds or 7 seconds when entering combat. I'm high level. I got all the fucking tech gear and everything. I'm cyberpunked the fuck out. And I literally just run through dudes, hit them three times with a sword before they've ever blinked.
Yeah. That's actually where my plays through is with those kind of games end.
when you're able to do that with everybody, yeah.
When I'm able to slow down time is when the game just becomes ridiculously too easy and I get bored super fast.
I mean, you only can do it for like 5 seconds at the beginning of combat. There's no other control over it besides when the enemy first starts to spot you, shit slows down.
Yeah, for me, it's when like I was playing Skyrim with my first character, because I always play Thaladred, okay? Yeah. I always play a big fucking bruiser with a shield and a sword, or a flail, if available. And when I played through Skyrim, I got to the point where basically if I ever block an attack, time slows down for them, but not for me. So I go to block the attack, and the dragon's like,
brrrr.
And I just like kind of walk over to the side and like stab him in the kidney. He's like, oh, this is no longer fun.
Thank you, Max Payne. You fucking ruined Skyrim for him.
Yeah, Max Payne. You should have died when you got shot 750 times in the beginning of the first game.
Those were great games. But yeah, I forgot what else I was going to say about Cyberpunk. But either way,
magic systems need to be focused.
Yeah. Well, Shadowrun
has one of the best magic systems ever.
Shadowrun is actually very good at that. It's actually very good at breaking up your systems for types of magic. But
I don't want to be like a cop with my new orc partner. We roll up in the hood.
And a magic wand. You find a magic wand.
Yeah, and then find a magic wand.
Like grants
and
wishes.
Now I gotta deal with this shit. And then I gotta go home and find someone hack my ATM. That's just too much.
Yep.
I, as a person, would just die. I want people to use either smoke and gunpowder at most, and magic, or we have super awesome atomic bombs, and that bitch has telekinesis, and that's it.
Oh, okay.
That bitch
is 11. So you can't use magic if it's a sci-fi setting, but telekinesis or mind power is perfectly fine.
You can always have in a tech setting, you can always have the 11.
Okay.
To make it simple. You can always have that one person who's been science too much and has broken through realities and is now essentially a god because science can't explain it. That's magic.
So little green men speaking to you with their minds perfectly okay. Yeah. Noted.
Right. But you can't cast Fireball. No fire. Yeah.
Unless your power is pyrokinesis, and then it's okay. Because it's not magic, you're doing it with your mind.
Right.
So, got it.
Yeah.
In other words,
you turn into a giant Diablo demon, and you beat up the witch called the Enchantress. And so then Will Smith slaps you in the face.
Yep, got it. So, Shadowrun, you're doing it wrong. Get rid of the magic. Give everybody mind powers. Problem solved. Works exactly the same way. But
I love how I had two examples there of fantasy settings.
Yep.
And both of them included Will Smith.
Yeah. I mean, he's fighting off the aliens, too. Don't forget that part. You know, since everything has mind powers. See how many Will Smith movies we can throw into this stupid-ass conversation.
Oh. Well, he did invent the X-ray.
Did he?
Was the movie where he had, like, the X-ray thing? Well, no, he didn't have the X-ray.
Oh, no, he was a superhero who had X-ray powers. That's right.
No. That was Hancock. Yeah, was a different. There was a movie that he had a son that he tried to win an Oscar for and didn't, where he was a salesman trying to sell technology to see inside the human body when X-rays were just coming out.
Huh.
But it wasn't X-ray technology. And he was homeless and living in bathrooms.
No, he's made so many movies, I don't even know the names of all of them.
He stopped making movies now, though.
That's not true. He'll be making them again here soon, now that he's not married anymore. He's going to need
not
that.
Married anymore?
They split, apparently, so now he's going to need that money again.
She take half his wealth?
More than likely she will.
Did he watch it? Because that's what he does.
All right, then. I don't even know what that's supposed to mean, and we're not going to find out on this podcast.
Hooray!
All right, guys, thanks for listening. I think we're out of here. Bye, Craig.
Is Will Smith's son okay?